from KQED.
Support for the California Report comes from Wharton San Francisco's Executive MBA program, delivering a rigorous academic experience immersed in the unique Bay Area ecosystem and access to a globally connected network. wharton.upenn.edu. The California Endowment, working to achieve health and justice for all. Learn more at calendow.org. And Eric and Wendy Schmidt, whose family foundation advances the wiser use of energy and natural resources on a planet where everything is connected. On the web at theschmidt.org.
Most days you can find Mo behind the cash register, selling things like face cream and dried chilies to farm workers at a neighborhood market in the Central Valley. Most nights, he calls his wife and three kids back in Yemen.
Assalamu alaikum. Kif halsha, habibti?
Mo's been working for years to bring them to California, but now he's devastated they might not be able to come because of President Trump's proposed travel ban. His best friend here helps comfort him. And surprisingly, she's a Trump supporter. Mo's on edge, like so many Californians born in other countries, uncertain if they're welcome here, worried about being separated from their families. I'm Sasha Coca, and today, a special edition of the California Report magazine, stories of California immigrants in limbo. We'll meet a soccer coach who thought she was protected from deportation.
And I just saw the headline, I was like, what the heck is this? Like, what in the world?
And we'll hear about a crusader for recycling who made a big mistake 2 decades ago.
This was the last thing on my mind. I didn't have any reason to believe that something in the past would come back to haunt me like this.
We're going to start by talking about immigrants who are undocumented. Many of them are trying to keep a low profile these days, taking down the crucifixes from their rearview mirrors, checking their taillights, anything to avoid being pulled over. Parents are making contingency plans for other people to raise their kids in case they don't come home one day. Our first story is about what happens when a parent is picked up by ICE, the ways it can destabilize a family financially and emotionally. As KQED's Julie Small tells us, that's what happened to one family in Oakland.
7, 8.
8-year-old Kevin counts the number of times he can tap his foot from the schoolyard asphalt to the top of a soccer ball.
10.
Okay.
It's part of the physical therapy he receives for strength and coordination. Kevin has cerebral palsy, and his legs cannot bear his full weight. He's holding himself up with a walker. At school, he uses a wheelchair. Back at their Oakland home, Kevin's mother, Gibieras, says she takes him to physical therapy every week while juggling the care of 2 younger children.
Before, my husband used to always ask for days off on the days that my son had therapy so he could help me.
But her husband's been in immigration detention for 2 months now. The couple met here nearly a decade ago and started a family. After Kevin, they had Gabriela and Christopher, now ages 4 and 2. Gibi's husband worked 3 jobs cleaning hotels and a restaurant to support the family so that she could take care of the kids. While his case is pending, his attorney has asked that we only use his first name, McGeeber. Yes, he was named after the hero of the 1980s TV show MacGyver, about a secret agent famous for getting out of tricky situations. The day ICE arrested McGeeber, he had just gone to bed after working a graveyard shift. It was 5 a.m., and he wanted to get a few hours of sleep before his next job. GB was washing dishes when a knock on the kitchen door startled her. 2 men in her driveway identified themselves as police and asked for her husband by name.
They told us they were investigating a hit and run.
They coaxed McGeeber outside by saying they needed to see the registration in his car. When he showed them the papers, that's when the couple realized these were Immigration and Customs Enforcement agents.
They started asking him questions. Do you have children? Are you married? He answered the first question. He said, yes, I have 3.
GB told her husband to keep his mouth shut. She'd learned about her right to remain silent at a legal training at her son's elementary school. She told McGeeber,
you don't need to answer anything. It's going to be worse for you if you keep answering them.
McGeeber had been deported from the U.S. nearly a decade ago, but returned from Guatemala after a notorious gang there attacked him and threatened his life. GB says the ICE agents who took her husband away told her he would call in 2 hours. She went back inside to wait.
I just thought, how is he? What am I going to do now? Is he going to call?
The children were still sleeping. She didn't know what to do. She started calling family members, hoping to reach someone, anyone. Finally, the phone rang. It was McGeeber.
But he only had 3 minutes to talk. He said, I need an attorney. I only have until 1 o'clock.
ICE was ready to put him on a plane that day. GB didn't know where to find an attorney. She turned to the school for help.
I had the luck of asking the right person, because when I took my son to school, the librarian was there, and I asked her, excuse me, but do you know of an attorney?
The librarian told the principal, who put her in touch with a legal services group.
Central Legal has a long-standing relationship with the Oakland School District, so the principal knew to call us.
Attorney Lisa Knox thinks a recent misdemeanor for reckless driving put McGeeber on the government's radar. He was arrested last year and fingerprinted at a jail. Knox says McGeeber's prior deportation limits his legal options.
He doesn't have the right to see a judge, and they could actually deport someone with a prior deportation order pretty much immediately, unless that person says that they're afraid to go back to their home country.
Knox is making the case that McGeeber would likely be killed if he was sent to Guatemala. She's asked an immigration judge to allow him to stay in the U.S. She's also asked ICE to release McGeeber until his case is resolved, due to the hardship on his family. He was their only source of income. ICE refused. The children have not seen their father since early February, but they talk to him most afternoons.
Hello?
GB passes the phone to Kevin, who passes it to Gabriela.
Gabriela! Deja el teléfono, habla con papá.
Hola, papi.
My daughter is the one that I think is missing him the most. She used to sleep cuddled up with him.
¿Qué estás haciendo?
GB says Gabriela doesn't understand where her daddy is living.
Como un perro.
Recently, she told her mom she wanted to move into the jail.
When she said, I'm going to go with my daddy. I'm just going to take my toys. I laughed. I said, don't you want to pack some clothes? And she said, nope, just my toys.
But Kevin is old enough to understand what's happening. The principal at his school advised GB to be straight with him. GB says her son's angry about what happened to his father. I ask Kevin, what does his dad tell him on the phone?
To keep my mom safe.
What do you say to him?
I say okay.
McGeeber has seen an immigration judge, but he won't have a full hearing on his case until June. For the California Report, I'm Julie Small in Oakland.
And now we turn to the story of another immigrant in limbo, not because he arrived in the U.S. without papers. In fact, he came with a green card, but he made one bad decision that changed his life forever.
It was totally out of character. You know, I mean, it was a real jumbled bad time.
So here's the story. Daniel Meyer was born in Macau, a former Portuguese colony near Hong Kong. When he was 3, he and his parents came to the San Francisco Bay Area. They moved around a lot, and it was hard to make friends. As a teenager in San Jose, Daniel fell in with a crowd he says were nerds, smart kids, but also misfits. After graduating high school, some of those friends cooked up a wild plan to rob drug dealers.
And I think what made it easier for me to go along with it was the fact that we were actually going after drug dealers, people that were preying on others. So that was our way of rationalizing what we did. Yeah, clearly that didn't work out very well for me. But yeah, I totally regretted it afterward.
Daniel was charged with a felony, convicted of armed robbery, attempted kidnapping. He was 21, sentenced to 11 and a half years in prison.
So with good behavior, I got out a little over 5 years, I think, when it was all said and done.
But he wasn't free because he wasn't a U.S. citizen. He could have applied for citizenship when he turned 18, but he was too distracted. And that cost him big time. From prison, he was sent to an immigration detention center. It was a shock. Daniel thought of himself as American. But to the U.S. government, he was a violent immigrant felon. They wanted to deport him. And here's where it gets complicated. Years after Daniel's family immigrated, Macau became part of China. So the plan was to deport him to China, even though he doesn't identify as Chinese.
From what I understand, they're just going to drop me off in China somewhere.
But China doesn't have an agreement to accept deportees from the U.S. So Daniel got released after a year and a half. This was back in 2001. They took away his green card, but as long as he kept checking in with immigration officials, he could get a temporary work permit. Today, the 43-year-old Daniel I meet, the one with the close-cropped hair, the big, easy smile, doesn't seem like someone who spent time in prison.
I think I used to walk around with a scowl, you know, just not anymore. I can't even picture that life anymore.
Today, Daniel has worked his way up to directing the fleet of trucks at the Ecology Center in Berkeley. It's one of the most sophisticated local recycling centers in the country. He trains at-risk youth in green-collar jobs and on the evils of plastic.
Yeah, we can collect everything, but you know, what's going to be done with it? Is it going to turn into fuel for somebody's cook fire? Is it going to be filling out the river and turning to toxic materials?
Daniel's co-workers at the Ecology Center, like Hans Cook, know all about his past.
He's living a good, honest life, the American dream, you know? Give the man another chance. He's already proven himself. How long you been out now?
Oh, wow.
12 years or something?
2001, so 16 years?
16 years without a crime. I would say that would speak for itself.
But it's not that simple. Daniel could still be deported. In fact, 2 years ago, ICE agents came looking for him right here at the recycling center.
This was the last thing on my mind. I didn't have any reason to believe that something in the past would come back to haunt me like this.
Daniel got caught up in a sweep of Chinese nationals. At that point, the U.S. had agreed to help China extradite people for prosecution, some of them corrupt government officials.
They put me in a holding cell, essentially no food, no water for 24 hours.
Then they transferred him to a private detention center in Southern California. His family had no idea where he was.
You know, if you're really in that system, it's really, it's a twilight zone.
One day, representatives from the Chinese government came to interview him.
They pretty much shook their heads, like, what are we going to do with this guy? He doesn't speak the language. He's definitely not one of the corrupt government officials we're looking for.
After a lot of advocacy from his co-workers at the Ecology Center, his lawyers, and even some elected officials, Daniel was released from detention after 3 months. But he's still in limbo. ICE knows he's here. They just don't know what to do with him.
No.
Yes.
No.
Daniel lives with his fiancée, Katrina. She's not a citizen either. And her 7-year-old son, Kyle, who's so excited to have Daniel as a stepdad.
I asked him, I said, what do you want for your present, you know, on your birthday? He's like, I want a dad. And I said, where are we going to get a dad, you know? And then he's like, Toys R Us. And I said, how much do you think is a dollar? So he's always wanted a dad.
Kyle, can you start from the beginning? A scout is.
Daniel's helping Kyle get ready for a Cub Scout meeting.
Trustworthy, loyal, helpful.
But Daniel's still on edge. He could be detained again at any time, even though there's no place to send him. But what if things change?
It's on my mind all the time. I have all these plans, a lot of things that I want to get done. Is it going to be interrupted? Now I have to make it easier for somebody else to take over my life if I'm not there.
Daniel's given Katrina a schedule of all his bills, and he always has money in his pocket, so he could buy a toothbrush or a phone card if he gets put in detention again. There is one possible solution for Daniel, but it's a long shot. He's petitioning the state court to reduce his 23-year-old felony charge to a misdemeanor. If that works, he could ask for a pardon from the governor. And that might mean he wouldn't be deported.
You know, I understand the underlying reasoning behind deporting violent felons. It's just, does one moment in time justify changing a person's life for the long term? Or can we change it for the better, give that person a second chance because he's shown that he's changed? I'm all for that second chance.
You're listening to a special edition of the California Report magazine. Today we're bringing you the stories of four California immigrants whose lives are in limbo. We asked you, our listeners, for some of your family's immigration stories and how changes to immigration policy could impact you.
We came through border checks. I was in the trunk for part of the journey, and then the back covered with a blanket. My parents say it was a miracle the patrol didn't see me.
If I lose my job, I have to just pack my bags and leave the country within a few days. And I thought, okay, maybe this H-1B visa was temporary and I'll probably get my green card soon. But then I faced reality where I have to wait almost 50 years to get my green card because I was born in India.
My family, my parents, and my maternal grandparents came over from Karachi, Pakistan with visas. One wrong move, they could have been denied health care benefits. One drunken night with friends and you could easily be deported. I fear that more people are going to be going underground, and as a society, we're not going to be benefiting from the beautiful diversity that immigration brings.
We've got pictures of some of the dozens of listeners who shared their stories with us at californiareport.org. Check it out and add your family's immigration story to the mix. And now we're going to meet an immigrant who crossed the U.S.-Mexico border when she was 10 with her 7-year-old brother to join their dad, who was picking grapes and peaches in the Central Valley. Now she's 28, and she's a dreamer, protected from deportation under Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals, or DACA. But President Trump's rhetoric has her feeling vulnerable, so vulnerable that for this story, she doesn't feel comfortable using her real name or the names of people in her family. The California Report's Ryan Levy introduces us to someone we'll call Olivia.
Hey, how's it going?
One of the first things I see when I walk into Olivia and her husband Jacob's San Francisco apartment is Bernie, a giant St. Bernard lurking in the corner between the couch and the TV.
This is Bernie.
We don't have pets, but we have stuffed animals.
The plush dog is one of many stuffed animals they've collected together since they met 8 years ago, working at a San Jose soccer store. They both played growing up and have classic soccer player builds, short, lean, and athletic. Jacob proposed last spring, and they started planning a wedding for fall 2017.
Like, I was finally going to have the wedding that I had always envisioned, but then November 8th happened, and I panicked.
I come home, and she's just not there. Like, it just looked like she was physically here, but her mind was just kind of, like, gone, like, she doesn't know what to actually think or do, you know?
After the initial shock, they ditched the big wedding and got married in a small ceremony in December. They wanted to do it before Trump was sworn in, so they could quickly apply for Olivia's green card through marriage. Jacob's a U.S. citizen. Olivia's actually lucky compared to other dreamers. Most people in her situation would have to leave the country for years while trying to legalize their status through marriage. But Olivia can pay a $1,000 penalty and process her paperwork here, because her aunt put her on a waiting list for a green card almost 20 years ago. Even so, the last few months have been a roller coaster of fear and uncertainty for Olivia.
There's no words to describe it. Just not knowing what's going to happen, it's probably the worst thing.
Will she even be able to get legal status through her marriage after entering the country illegally? Will the Trump administration consider her a criminal? The president sent out some mixed messages about his plans for DACA.
We are going to deal with DACA with heart.
We're going to deal with them with heart, which means absolutely nothing. So, like, there was no way of knowing, like, what he's planning to do.
Olivia says she's been so on edge that she's been avoiding the news and throwing herself into her work as a Spanish teacher at a San Francisco high school. After the election, she signed up to help coach the girls' soccer team.
¿Ese cono y ese cono? ¿Están igual? ¿Sí? ¿Más o menos?
Olivia sets up a conditioning drill during a windy soccer practice before asking the girls to pick a country for a game called the World Cup.
All right, so which countries are on the final now? Czech and Cuba. They don't watch the World Cup, do they?
Coaching and being around her students has helped Olivia feel calmer, less fearful than she did when Trump took office. But as we go inside the school to talk, she tells me it's impossible to completely block out the news. Like that a fellow dreamer was picked up on the California-Mexico border and deported. Or that another got arrested in Mississippi after speaking out at a press conference.
And I just saw the headline. I was like, what the heck is this? Like, what in the world? Like, there isn't protection for people with DACA. There just isn't.
In the middle of all this uncertainty, Olivia is also trying to plan a belated wedding celebration.
Yeah.
She and Jacob check out the sound system at a small clubhouse in San Francisco.
Okay, perfect.
But even if the celebration goes off perfectly, Jacob and Olivia will still have to be grilled on the minute details of their relationship to prove their marriage is legitimate.
We love each other. We take care of each other. We've been there for each other, like, since the beginning.
Last month, Olivia got fingerprinted and vetted through more than 100 security checks by immigration officials. But her lawyer is confident her undocumented status won't be a stumbling block.
But that's right now. We may get our appointment for an interview end of October or November. So, I mean, that's a long time from now, and a lot of things are changing kind of quickly.
Olivia says she won't be able to exhale until she has a green card in her hand, if that happens. For the California Report, I'm Ryan Levy.
And now we end our show where we started, at a grocery store in a small farmworker town on the edge of the Central Valley. There aren't any sidewalks in East Porterville. There are as many dirt roads as paved streets. This is mostly an immigrant community with plenty of undocumented folks who are feeling vulnerable. The California Report's Vanessa Rancagno introduces us to a guy whose life has been turned upside down, even though he's an American citizen.
La Buena Vista is a corner store with a butcher in the back, a taco truck out front, and a stray dog for a mascot. It's a type of place that sells everything from lotto scratchers to engine oil and cilantro.
¿Cómo estamos, hermano? ¿Mañana trabajar o no?
The guy behind the cash register is Mo, a big guy with weary eyes and a warm smile. He's from Yemen. His real name is Saber Oscar, but he saves that for the DMV. Here, he's Mo.
Gracias.
Mo was 15 when he immigrated. His dad had been living in the U.S. for a while when he sent for him. Mo spent more than a decade working in factories in Indiana, then moved to East Porterville to help his cousin with the market. He's been here 8 years now and picked up a lot of Spanish. He's also taught his customers some Arabic, so the store's official language is a kind of patois.
Hala, hala, hala.
That's welcome in Arabic.
Now everybody, when they come in, they say, hala, hala, hala.
Everyone here knows Mo as the goofy guy behind the cash register. But the cheerful demeanor masks another side of Mo, one I saw when I visited him at home.
Your current balance will allow you to talk for 45 minutes.
Mo has a wife and three daughters in Yemen. He calls them most nights. He always planned to bring them to the U.S. He wanted to save up money, buy a house so they'd have a nice place to live. But since the Civil War started 2 years ago, he's been desperate to get them here.
Hello. Assalamu alaikum. كيف حالك يا حبيبتي?
He asks his 16-year-old daughter how she's doing.
She said it's the airplane, it's all times in a year, and the freight is going to drop stuff to them, you know? And she said she cannot sleep at night time. الحرب والطائرات لا تسمعون يوميا.
Mo is especially worried about his 10-year-old daughter. The bombing has taken a toll, physically and psychologically.
Her sister is being thrown up a lot, and because she's scared, and, you know, the little one, they cannot find enough food to eat, and every week is getting worse. They want to come here, but they don't know what to do, what they're going to do.
He filed the applications to bring his family to America about 2 years ago. Because of the war in Yemen, it's been difficult to provide all the required documents.
I tried to explain to them, just give me a little bit of time, and then you guys going to be here, you know, and then you guys going to be okay.
With the Trump administration's looming travel ban, though, it's hard for them to believe that. Mo and his family are left praying it won't go into effect, or that they get approval to come before it does.
They make me bleed inside, you know, when I talk to them. I don't know what to do. Every time I call, I'm afraid they're not answering anymore.
At the local mosque, people are gathered for Friday prayer. Bassem Akra is the manager here. He says it draws more than 100 families from Porterville and surrounding towns.
They're from all over, you know, from Yemen, from Palestine, from Egypt, from Jordan, from Pakistan.
Some of them came as refugees, fleeing conflicts. Others, like Mo, joined their relatives who were already here. The weather and agricultural lifestyle in the Central Valley are familiar, Akra says today most of them are business owners, and he says now they're scared.
Because we never seen anything like that. People even, they worry like if they stopped, you know, in a traffic ticket or something, and, you know, they're going to be targeted.
Luckily, Akra says, this mosque hasn't gotten any threats like others around the state. But that doesn't give Mo much comfort. Mo's not at Friday prayer. He's behind the register.
I get afraid too, you know, if something going to happen, you know. It's like they shooting people to when they pray in the mosque, stuff like that. So I think about this kind of stuff too.
Mo lived through 9/11 in the U.S., and it was hard. He says the climate today feels worse. For more than a year, Mo watched the presidential campaign whip up anti-immigrant feeling among some of his fellow Americans.
I feel like I'm different, you know. They make me feel I'm different. Even if you're American citizen, you're still nothing, you know, you're nothing. And that hurt my feeling bad, too.
Now, after 17 years as a citizen, Mo's place in this country feels precarious. He's not just worried for himself, his family, and fellow Muslims. He's worried for his customers, the vulnerable farmworker families that keep his market in business.
You just sit down, enjoy, you know.
Through all this, he has one solid source of support. His best friend, Darla. She's over for dinner, chicken and orange rice. She's been helping him with the immigration paperwork for his family. But even this friendship is strained now. Darla voted for Trump.
At least you say you're sorry, you know.
I don't think I did anything wrong.
Yes, you did. Do you feel it now?
No, well, yeah. Yeah. You know, I do feel bad. I feel bad if you feel insulted that I would choose a president who is so discriminating and so racist. I had no idea that he was going to do any of that. I just have total faith that everything's going to be okay, you know. Inshallah.
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 For the California Report, I'm Vanessa Rancagno in East Porterville.
You've been listening to a special edition of the California Report magazine, a production of KQED Public Radio in San Francisco. Our director is Susie Racho. Our technical producer is Seal Muller, with additional engineering from Katie McMurrin. Our online producer is David Marks. Miranda Leitzinger is our social media producer, and she's been collecting immigration stories from our listeners. Add your story at californiareport.org or drop us a note on Facebook. The California Report's senior editor is Victoria Mauleon. Our editorial team includes Tyke Hendricks, Ingrid Becker, Ethan Lindsay, and Holly Kernan. I'm Sasha Coca. Thanks for listening. This is the California Report magazine.
Support for the California Report comes from the James Irvine Foundation. Accepting nominations now for the 2018 James Irvine Foundation Leadership Awards at irvine.org. And Eric and Wendy Schmidt, whose family foundation advances the wiser use of energy and natural resources on a planet where everything is connected. On the web at theschmidt.org.